Welcome everybody to Keynote Office Hours. Again, we're joined by team members Bazil and Doria to talk about the NFT launch, which is live and ongoing now. So if you haven't gotten your Swarm 2 NFT, make sure you do that before it mints out. You can go to claim.keynote.org, get your NFT, start to enjoy the benefits of free hosting, all the other perks that come with it. And that's what we're talking about today. We're talking about kind of the experiences that Keynote users can enjoy after they claim their NFT. So before we get into experience, let's just talk for a second about like what happens after somebody claims an NFT. Do you want to take that one, Doria, since you're doing the whitelist?
Sure. Well, the purpose of this campaign is basically just to get the first wave of, you know, regular users onto the platform, users and builders. So all you do is you just, it's a free mint to get membership in our sort of, you know, builders sort of community channel on Discord, and you get like hosting and access to new stuff as we put it out. So we have a hosting platform. It's called Valet. Gated
by the way.
Yeah, Valet. It's gated by ownership of this little membership NFT, and we're just going to give free hosting access on that platform to the people who own it, with the goal, of course, of having people try out what we're doing and have an easy launch pad on which to build new stuff. Because right now we're just in a phase of Keynote, we have the platform. It's ready to go. It's not finished, but it's definitely ready to build on. And now it's time to just get some builders, get some users, trying it out. So yeah.
Why is the hosting platform so particularly good for developers as well? Like, I mean, I have my answer, but as a non-developer.
Oh yeah, I mean, there's some good reasons. So first off, like anybody, regardless of whether or not they have the membership NFT, anybody can, of course, download the source code, build the repo, you know, launch a Keynote, get on the network. Like there's no barriers to that. We release binaries every time we do a release. You can self-host, no problem. But that's a little more involved than just going to a website and clicking on a couple buttons. So we do want to have that, you know, zero effort experience available. Also, if you're a developer, being on hosting is actually pretty nice because it's basically, an SSH target for your development. So you can, with our tooling, just SSH into your hosted node and build, your apps there. You can deploy them there in one command. And you can, give other people access to this thing so that they can, you know, try out the app you just wrote or something like that. So it is helpful in that way. You've got a dedicated, you know, URL for your node as opposed to just, you know, it's running on your laptop. You connect to it on localhost. Maybe you have an IP address. This gives you like a website URL, all that stuff.
I'm pretty excited about, you know, breaking my hosted.
Well, no. You and everybody else should be encouraged to try as hard as you can to do that. I think it's going to be pretty difficult to get it to, you know, stop working for more than a minute or so. We have a pretty aggressively robust, you know, safety measures and recovery measures for these nodes. They're intended to be bulletproof.
Okay, the count on robust for Edgar is now one, but it's aggressively robust, which I love. Yeah, I think it's
that might count double.
I think like for instance, if you, I mean, just like a simple example, if I accidentally shut down my screen or something, and I don't know how to get my Keynote running again, I think we built something in where it's like every 15 minutes or so, it notices that the Keynote is not running and then resets itself. Is that correct?
Even sooner than that, if you actively like shut down your node, that is a backstop timer for if you misconfigure your SSH or the like ability to screen onto the actual Keynote terminal, stuff like that.
All right, so what can I do with my Keynote right now? Can we talk about some experiences that we can that we have there?
Sure. Yeah. So basically what you can do with it right now is boot it or log into it and look at it. You can pick an initial username. You can try to access the terminal and see the pretty colors. You can look at the beautiful homepage. And then as for actual things, you can go to the App Store and see a set of, I don't know, something like 8 or 10 apps that are available for download there. These are all the sort of initial projects and experiments that we've run on Keynotes to date. And you can download one or all of those and you can use the apps. So the highlights to me right now are we've got a Meme Deck app, which are with our, you know, our good friends at Meme Deck. They have their Keynote app on the App Store. You can use Meme Deck through Keynote. We have Barter, which is a very interesting piece of infrastructure for selling NFTs within AI over Telegram. We've got Filter, which connects to a browser extension, lets you filter your Twitter feed with an AI. And then we've got an app that I just put out like yesterday called Contacts, which is a contact management app. You know, people's phone numbers and email addresses and stuff. And it's networked. So you can share that book of contacts with other people and synchronize automatically. And the purpose of that app was to work on that state synchronization project. And I used the CRDT, a conflict-free replicated data type to achieve that synchronization between users of the contact book, which I'm very happy about. It seems to be working really well. So yeah, can download one or all of those and use them. And we'll be adding more apps. That's going to be the main, the main thing that we're doing over the next several weeks is building and adding more apps to the store.
And also like pulling some of those apps into tighter experiences that are more interesting. Like a lot of them are like the building blocks that are more interesting if they're combined into something. So Contacts is more interesting if you can like know some, like link someone's Telegram to their Keynote and then start driving like, you know, events to their Keynote and like syncing up those things, and so forth. Like there's a lot you can do there. So that's just one example, but a lot of it comes when not even like connecting in sort of a strict composability sense of like all these processes, I don't know, talking to each other in a big dance, but even just having individual apps that pull some pieces together.
Yeah. I mean, as an aside, I'm really all about like sort of the singular experience at this moment. Right. So like one app that's just going to do one interesting thing. And just see where that goes, because we know that we have the tools for composing between these projects. So now we just need to have a couple projects and then the interesting compositions can come out of that.
Yeah. And also like static compositions are pretty appealing where you use smaller ones as a proof of concept, but then make a more monolithic app that pulls it all together, I think is what you're getting at.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
If that, like, so to be concrete, we could have this, like, you know, Telegram thing that, like, ingests your commands from Telegram. You can have a contacts thing. You could have Keynote-enabled Telegram chats. And then those are all more interesting when you kind of pull them together, maybe into one app or linked suite of apps that's, like, distributed at the same time, or linked suite of processes, because then you can deliver a very tight, interesting experience. So just getting some of those like pulled together, and not like, I think what you're reacting to is not wanting to get stuck at, okay, we have these like 5 single purpose apps and we have to figure out how to stitch them together, you know, sort of live, but rather just being like, okay, we see how to do this. Let's pull this together into a tight experience.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Also like as soon as one app becomes interesting, it's very much possible to create overlay apps that sort of, you know, do other things, and use that app as like a data store or a substrate, in a permissionless way. Permissionless meaning that the developer of the original app did not, you know, condone or have to like authorize you doing that. You just did it. So that kind of stuff.
I want to talk about a couple of those apps that you mentioned. Did you mention Command Center? I don't know if you did. I mean, obviously.
I didn't actually. So yeah. Command Center is a really cool app too.
Yeah. So Command Center is this, sort of API aggregator that, as of right now, aggregates Grok, not the Twitter Grok, but the GROQ AI Grok API, the GPT API and, Telegram bot API. So I think for me, it's kind of my favorite app right now, aside from Meme Deck. It allows you to do speech to text bot very easily on Telegram. I mean, like very easily. This stuff is not sort of trivial to do. And so the underlying, I guess, work to get this working, you know, was quite a lot, but then you have, it's a quite a trivial setup for the user now, where I can just very easily create a Telegram bot in like maybe 30 seconds. And then what I've got is this cool speech to text Telegram bot that hears my speech, interprets it, and then can answer me back in Telegram with text. Which is, I mean, just really cool to be able to set up in like less than a minute.
I mean, that is really cool, actually. I'm not sure if anybody has actually ever done that before with a Telegram bot, of like record a voice note, send it, and have the bot listen to your voice note and respond. Like it feels very cool. I think it's going to be even cooler when that sort of primitive gets picked up by some developer on our team or anyone that turns that into then, you know, it's executing trades in your wallet, or it's sending messages to other people, or it's organizing a meeting in your calendar. I mean, that's when it really gets, you know, exciting.
Do we want to do a quick talk on why other people haven't done that?
I mean, sure. You know, answer that question.
Like, so yeah, it's, I just think it's like worth talking about because like, absent talking about that, people can wonder like, A, whether it's worth doing or think that it's been done or whatever. And
lost you, Bazil.
Lost him. Yeah. Okay. Spaces strikes again.
Sounds like he got cut off or something, but, no, I don't think it's Spaces. I think it's him, but, I mean, I actually thought of another thing while he was saying that, which I want to mention. Like this kind of stuff, like the stuff I just mentioned about like, oh, like you send a voice note over Telegram and then, you know, the AI like does something for you. Like it sounds an awful lot like what, OpenAI demoed like earlier this week, with regards to their AI voice assistant, right? Which is, you know, not, That's definitely not a coincidence. I think certainly a lot of people are converging on this thing. And then what really differentiates what we're doing is the, you know, the architecture, behind like that tool, right? Like with OpenAI, like you have this like sort of monolithic tool. They have a bunch of services that they hook up to their assistant and you're running through their system. And with Keynote, now I don't even have to really go on about the, you know, personal data ownership angle and the safety angle for you, the user, because I think that's basically a given and well understood by everybody familiar with this field. But also you have this extensibility aspect that's not present in a, you know, AI assistant created by a single company. The purpose of this architecture that we've laid out is to have that system be open, modular, like really, really hackable so that you can do actually whatever you want with it.
Well, you want to talk about that, and I don't want to undermine what you're saying, but I do want to concretize why it's so important, because there's a demo that they did with Khan Academy. I don't know if everyone's seen it, but it's floating around on Twitter, where you have Sal Khan's son is learning trigonometry, and he's drawing on the triangle, and the AI can see what he's drawing. And he can ask questions like, am I doing this properly? And the AI kind of has this interesting emotional sort of speech, you know, and it also, seems to be able to understand the child's emotion as well. Like if he's frustrated or hesitant about something. And, it really, as a parent, it like really struck home to me how dangerous it kind of is to have OpenAI be the single point of, you know, AI education for people's kids. And, yeah, so not to undermine what you're saying, but it really made it very concrete why I need to have like a different, really good AI model.
Yeah. I mean, I say that it goes without saying, but you're right. It's worth saying that is a very, very meaningful point for a lot of people. I just try not to lead with it because it's there's also a large group of people that simply don't care, right? And so you need to acquire network effects with those people through other means, and I think we do have those other means. So not only do you get that personal sovereignty, but you get this this openness and hackability that is really exciting for people such as myself.
Bazil, I think you're back. Do you want to continue your point? Just checking to see if you can speak again.
Yeah, it looks like I can. Spaces is kind of stupid. To follow on to the LLM point there, and like OpenAI as tutor, I won't go into like the big background, but I think one issue here is that people aren't yet at the stage where they feel that this stuff is completely essential. And I think you have to get to where it's completely essential and you know exactly what you use it for before you can say things like, I want this alternate version of it. And I think right now the kind of, you know, privacy desire or alternate like desire is like kind of theoretical because people don't have it like deeply embedded into their workflows yet, which is why you have to like, you know, lead with other stuff that is like sort of more immediately, you know, usable. But yeah, that's kind of a side point.
Oh, also, as long as we're riffing, Bazil, props for the call that you made like at least 6 months ago that other people are just starting to catch on to, which is that like the diminishing returns have very clearly set in, and the new models coming out are not they're not better enough to justify sort of going all in on just like accepting the latest and greatest. So the future almost certainly will involve.
This is super nuanced because I actually think that like GPT-4o is like pretty useful, and I've seen people use it for some really interesting business like stuff. And I think that will continue. And I think other like, you know, models and companies will get there. I mean, obviously I think you kind of have to be bullish about, you know, Llama 3 fine tunes, and stuff like that, which doesn't contradict your point at all. But I think like there was this kind of very, I'm not going to say it's lazy. I think in March 2023, it looked very reasonable to be like, we're at the bottom of an exponential. This is going to get better really fast, and you should almost put anything you're doing on hold until you see where that is, because like the world just might be so different in terms of skills required, you know, where power is located, all that. And I think the flattening out of that curve, instead of like, you know, it turned out it was like, you know, it's right now it looks like it was more, at least in this time period, a logarithm instead of an exponential. That flattening out, I think then drastically changes things where you're like, okay, we have this very powerful new primitive, but for a variety of reasons, it seems capped and it's going to get incrementally productionized. I think again, OpenAI is doing great stuff. I think other places are too. And like, how do you kind of maximally make use of that productionization? And some of the answers there are kind of lazy. Like I think, people who jump straight to LLM agents without thinking about deployment, it's very lazy because we're multiple orders of magnitude away from where, you know, AI can just solve deployment type friction. And so I think like stuff like that then takes on outsized importance because it's the way that you can actually make use of this stuff. So I don't know. It's a subtle thing where I don't know. Is my mic still coming through fine? I think yes.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's kind of like
how you, I feel like I almost have to swing back the other way now and emphasize all of the cool stuff that you can do and the things that will be opening up and that will improve. It feels like, you know, an NBA playoff series where a team loses game, you know, one, and everyone's like, you know, they're done, it's over. And then they win two games and they're so back. And like the truth is always like somewhere in the middle. And you want to keep like, you know, figuring out where things are. And I think like we might even, I don't know, there's some chance of sort of an AI. I don't think AI winter is going to happen because I think it's just too useful right now to keep productionizing the stuff. But I think there will be, it will become generally accepted pretty soon that that productionizing is the thing. Honestly, I think places like YC that have sort of gone all in on LLMs will be powerful, but not so powerful that you don't need startups like massaging stuff around them will do really well. And I think similarly, like Keynote is really well positioned for, they'll be super powerful. You want them, but you need to do, you know, this engineering work to give them a substrate like matters a lot.
Yeah. I mean, let's dig into that because we've had some, you know, interesting conversations with people who want to build agents, on Keynote. And, I think it's really exciting because, we do have a substrate that's going to be, you know, novel and very powerful for agents. It's a combination of a couple things. So one is, and this is a recent development, by the way, I can, you know, sort of announce, Nick and I have been working on, like the API setup for our processes and getting those to be truly sort of, publishable in a static way and composable is basically finished. So we've got sort of that ties into this because now we've got basically a single file that an LLM can ingest and understand how to make queries and requests and handle responses from a process. You combine that with capabilities-based security where you now have like a very, you know, clear delineation between what an agent can and cannot do within your system. And that barrier is itself programmable in various ways. Like this is the substrate that you're talking about that unlocks like the real value of these, you know, whatever you want to call them, sub AGI models.
Yeah, I think people who
we lose Bazillion.
Yeah, he just cut out.
He keeps turning my mic off.
Okay, you're back now.
People who have gone down this productionizing road of like, I actually want extensible LLM agents to work, they appreciate what we've done because everyone who does that immediately reinvents the pattern of creating sort of some kind of node-based operating system to run WASM processes, or maybe you install JavaScript stuff or something like that. And they pretty quickly get how much work there is in making that rock solid. Like the proof of concept takes like a week or two, and the productionizing is like especially of dev tools and libraries around it, is like literally a multi-year process. And I think that's where we have a huge head start because we have the base substrate now. We have some of the developer tools, and then by the time other people need to figure out they need to make the substrate or use ours, we'll be then like, you know, 6 months to a year ahead on the developer tools and libraries part.
Yeah. It's really nice. And there's no barriers to using stuff that people are working on outside of Keynote. There's really, really straightforward process of integrating that stuff. It can be done.
So, yeah, the AI one is interesting overall, because I'll go a totally different direction with it than the AI substrate one, et cetera. Because I think it's true, I think it does get overplayed. I think there's a more subtle thing, which is every time I talk to an AI builder who wants to do some kind of agent type thing at scale, they always verbalize a system that implicitly has a ton of crypto going on to coordinate kind of global state and API state. And then also for metering resources and stuff like that. And like, you can't, I integrate Stripe, in other lives. And like, it's hard. It's as good as you can get. They're a great company, but it's annoying. And that only gets you the payments part, for metering, and doesn't even get you, the other parts, but even that is like an insane amount of friction. So I think that all these AI builders, when you talk to them, they all assume that the crypto part is sort of solved or there because they're not that into it, or because I think it's like the Turing complete trap, where because they can verbalize something they know would work with current crypto, they assume that it's doable in a reasonable amount of time. And I think that by really hitting some of these, in some ways, more frivolous or fast iteration or degen crypto use cases, I think we like force ourselves to build out the stuff that then has us ready for those AI builders who assume that that's there and, you know, usually haven't quite encountered yet that it's like really not.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that side of this equation is very, very interesting too, because you have in crypto a decentralized process of trying to get to that. And so far, like, the absolute best is like, it's like Solana plus Telegram bots. It's like not, it is not the intense, it's not like the, you know, multi-chain abstracted intents-based architecture that the greatest minds of the industry have been furiously thinking up for the past several years. And that's very interesting and, unfortunate, because you look at like the bull case for Ethereum, it's like AI agents are going to use this as their native currency. is that possible today? No. It's equally as hard as using Stripe or whatever. So we need to change that. We need to change that right away. But I mean,
yeah, and that's like, and there's an incremental path. There's an incremental path to doing that that serves other business cases in the meantime, which is really cool. And I think that's the value of some of these, let's call them simpler crypto use cases, like kind of people who want to iterate social or game experiences fast. We could riff on like, you know, world PvP stuff in a sec and things like that. So we haven't talked about that. Yeah, like I think that would be cool. And I think that like having those driving us puts us in position to actually start solving these things.
Yeah, we have the developer for that game in our Discord community, and we all got a heads up of like, you know, how cool this game was going to be. So we were all pretty hyped for it when it launched. And it's lived up to the promise. It's been very fun. But yeah, what's cool about that is like just seeing how perfectly it matches up with the tools we're building for those kinds of programs. So yeah, we have a lot of ideas there.
He had a hell of a time getting it going though. And it kind of, I mean, no shade on them because he's making it work, but, he had a hell of a time getting all the stuff to work. And this is like, seems to be like the, I don't know, web three experience, building on web three experience where,
right.
Everything is kind of broken.
Right, exactly. And you're doing all that to achieve, what is essentially a standard sort of web two level of quote unquote, you know, trustlessness. So you're sort of like, you're stuck as a person building these things. You're stuck between trying to, you know, leverage crypto, but also trying to make something that actually works. And there's no point on that curve right now, which is comfortable.
or optimal. And so I think what we can offer is the optimal placement on that curve. That's a decent way to sum it up. You could do this today. So now it's just a matter of building these things out, proving that to people, actually making some of these things and going from there.
I seem to recall you saying that, that you think that sort of like fragmented front-end experience is, can be improved by Wasm Canvas. Is that how you feel?
Oh, no, that's sort of, I mean, it's sort of like a separate thing or tangential. It doesn't change like the basic equation in this.
I think you were more into recently is that more stuff should be done on the back end, and it's not because it's too hard to deploy to the back end in a similar way that you scoped out your proof of concept or business logic. So like you can make a simple like app that works really well just like in the front end if it's locally, but then when you try to like, you know, run that at scale, there's a lot of challenges, and right. Those challenges are solved if you can run the app as a thinner front end with more happening on the back end. Like for example, yeah. Just to be concrete, like most like crypto type apps are, it's all front end hitting a chain, so any data persistence or anything is done on chain. Everything is done as like your front end hitting the chain, doing lots of queries to RPCs, to figure out what your next actions are, stuff like that. And like you can improve that by making a lot more happen on the back end, having the back ends be stable, kind of always on, having your front end just figure out what the state of its interface is rather than having to process the whole thing. So I think that's a bigger deal. The Wasm front end thing is sort of an interesting experiment in, are there benefits to having the same types on the front end and back end? In the same way that you would get if you have like, you know, a full stack JavaScript app, for example. Yes. Which you can do. And then I think also are there advantages to drastically simplifying the front end deployment, where you can have like a much simpler kind of compilation process for the front end, have it be like injected directly to, the Keynote node that's going to be serving it. Can you sort of get some benefits from like drastically simplifying front end hosting? And then is there some class of apps here that benefits from not using the DOM and having a clear way to both unify the types across the front end and back end, but then do stuff to them that's not the DOM? Because regardless of its benefits and how many people know how to write it, writing DOM-based applications is very expensive. The benefit of them is that AI can write them pretty well. So that is a pretty big benefit. That is a pretty big benefit to HTML CSS. Yeah. But whenever people want more precise graphical positioning, using the DOM is very, very expensive because the people who know how to write that, you have to basically pay them $10,000 a month or more. And probably they won't do it on a one-off basis, and probably like the GPT-4 can't get it right. So yeah, that's the challenge for anything that's even moderately, let's say not even pixel perfect, but like you have a sort of graphical layout, that's more than a grid. That's very hard to achieve. And so I think there's some potential wins. That would be the big win of like Wasm and direct canvas drawing.
And just for context, this is all, you know, in the mindset of like, I want to make like a crypto game. I want to make, you know, an exciting new user experience that like people can use in their browsers. We're doing that stuff and setting up that tooling for developers. I mean, totally separately, I think the idea of having a strong, I almost said robust, backend, and then having like the types shared between the front end and the back end maybe is not just exciting for ergonomic reasons, but also like sort of safety, auditability. So if you can imagine like a DeFi front end, the DeFi front ends today are extremely heavyweight. They're doing a lot of data management in your front end. And this is all happening in TypeScript, more or less. And while that's an improvement over JavaScript and that it does have types, like you're still getting I mean, if you open, like, literally the proof of this is you open your browser console in like a DeFi app, and there's a million errors. Like, it's just, there's constantly errors and exceptions being thrown and all this stuff. So it's clearly not a programming environment. And this is a place where there's, yeah, a ton of money has been put into trying to make this work, and you're still getting that fundamental unreliability. So like, what the heck? There's got to be a better way, right? So the better way is writing a backend in like an actually sort of robust language like Rust, and then just piping those data structures very dumbly to a front end and displaying them. So I think there are security and safety gains to be made by doing that, as well as ergonomic gains.
There's, I mean, from the idiot's perspective, there's like a, I mean, don't you take a hit on slowdown from, you know, things that have to be sent back and forth to this room?
No, this would actually be like more performant probably, because instead of like indexing from an RPC and building everything on the front end, you could be indexing constantly on a server that's always on. And then, yeah, the server just sends exactly what data you want to display on the front end. It's actually like a more performant architecture overall.
Okay.
Because the alternative, just to be clear, the alternative basically looks like you open up this program, and this program has to sort of assemble a view of a blockchain for you, right? It has to, like, you know, you're looking at the entire like Ethereum chain, and you're not looking at it all, but you're doing queries on it to assemble like your portfolio and the price chart of this asset and so on and so forth. And so they're hitting an RPC that's giving them chain data, and then they're also hitting a centralized backend that's usually just run by the company that built this app that's serving up like sort of pre-calculated data of this, which is in itself a giant problem if you want to, you know, be using this app permissionlessly, and those servers can get shut down because you know, these people can get arrested. But yeah, if you get rid of that centralized server, like, you need another place to index that data. And even if you don't, it's really helpful to have that.
Do we have anything else we want to riff on? Let people ask questions if they want to. I should say that since we mentioned World PvP, I would like everyone to go check out the game and invest in Turkey.
Okay. I mean, look, the last thing I'll riff on is that it's pretty obvious from talking about this that we need to quickly deliver, like, you know, some more applications. We're getting a little bit too verbal in our explanations of advantages, which always happens when, you know, the concept of what we've done with primitives then outruns exactly where the applications are. So I think it's time to, you know, focus and get those out.
Okay. Anything else we want to talk about before we close out? Do we hit everything? Maybe just one more thing, either of you. We didn't really talk about or just mention what you're excited about upcoming soon. So I'll do a little alpha at the end of this conversation, like a couple of minutes if you've got anything.
Okay, you can go first, Doria, and then I'll say what I'm excited about.
Sure, yeah. I mean, we've got some stuff coming soon. We've got a major upgrade to the system that is going to include this, like, type composability stuff. It's also going to include, like, a big networking upgrade. Let's see, what else? I mean, I've got some interesting HTML canvas experiments coming as well, so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm excited for that stuff to happen. And then I think we will be deploying the actual, like, global namespace pretty soon and figuring out which chain to put that on. So I think that's, like, a big thing. And then, yeah, I'm really excited about actually pulling together some of these, like, sort of disparate proofs of concept and experiences into some tighter apps, I think is going to make a big difference, like pretty fast.
Oh yeah. I mean, we should dedicate a space once that namespace is deployed to just talking about
what it is. Yeah. That'll be pretty soon, I think.
Yeah. Actually, that's also really relevant to this sort of like idea we're laying out about like crypto front ends and back ends, because this namespace, just as a sneak preview, I guess, is going to, you know, make it such that a developer who wants to build a back end and then only have like, you know, one or two quote unquote global variables or whatever you want to call them and have those live on chain, they can do that without themselves needing to like write and deploy a contract, which is, to me, as a person who doesn't really know how to write and deploy contracts willy-nilly, it's a big developer experience upgrade.
Great. All right. Anything else? I'm going to close it out. I think that's it. Okay.
Yeah. No.
Great. Thank you everyone for joining us. Mark your calendars, because we do this at the same time every week, noon Eastern, on our x.com account. Tomorrow there'll be a blog about today's topic, so look out for that. Check the links that are posted below the space. We have the developer docs if you write code. We have links to the Discord, which is where the team hangs out pretty much all day, every day. You can talk to our team members. You can ask questions on our support channel. You can just chat with us. We also have a Telegram as well. So until next time, thank you for listening. Thanks to the developers for their time, and goodbye to everyone.
Thanks, guys.
Later, guys.